One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Today's episode is brought to you by Mahina Offshore Services, which is the company run by John Neal, who has been a guest on the podcast many times before. Mahina Offshore Services offers three ways to help you get started with a sailing lifestyle. There's ocean sail training expeditions in many places around the world, boat selection consultation if you are planning on boat shopping, and last but not least, a virtual offshore cruising seminar, which is a great resource you can do at your own pace from the comfort of your couch. And you can learn more about all of these and also some free resources on the website mahina.com. Here's what's coming up next on the Liveaboard Sailing Podcast.
Here we land and it's COVID and they're like, you need to go now. So nobody, our broker was supposed to come down and sail with us to St. Martin. He couldn't get there. He was stuck in Grenada. So really, we had a manual that was in French, and we didn't have anybody walk through the boat with us. So we knew what we knew from the site survey, and that was about it. So we were learning the boat as we were sailing across from island to island, where we couldn't stop anywhere if something broke anyway. So it didn't really matter.
Welcome to the podcast. I am your host, Annika. On the Liveaboard Sailing Podcast, I chat with awesome people who live, work, and travel on their sailboats. My guests share inspiring stories and real-life advice about the lifestyle so that you and I can be better prepared for our sailing adventures. This week, I'll take you to the Caribbean with my guests Ben and Kitra, who talk to me about their first couple of years of cruising. This episode has some great tips for anybody thinking about buying a boat in the Caribbean, as that is what Kitra and Ben did, and it wasn't exactly smooth sailing. We also talk about jumping into the lifestyle without excessive preparation or expectations. I really enjoyed hearing about their attitude and approach and how that has served them well, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Here is my chat with Kitra and Ben. Let's start by talking about the present moment. Where in the world are you? And of course, since we are talking about sailing, what kind of boat are you on?
So right now we're in Antigua. We arrived about a week ago. We had friends that came with us and they flew home. And then, of course, we had boat trouble, so we had to work on that.
We came up, we spent hurricane season last year down in Grenada. And so mid-November, we started working our way up the island chain, and we're probably going to stay up here for a couple months, maybe. And then we'll start working our way back down Grenada Way and do hurricane season back down there this year.
So we have a Katana 47, which is a catamaran.
It's a daggerboard cat. So we have a little bit more upwind performance than a regular non-daggerboard cat. But we sacrifice some because we don't have the space that we're a little bit more sparse, I guess you would say, than some of the other catamarans. So we don't have, while it works really great for us and for a couple friends, it would probably not be a great platform for folks with kids, or at least if you had older kids. Of course, I say that, and then all of a sudden I start thinking of all the guys that have katanas that have kids. So maybe that's a disregard, but anyway.
And how long have you been sailing now? And you talked a little bit, you've gone from Grenada to Antigua and you're heading back, but how long have you been living on your boat, and where did you start at the very beginning?
So we bought the boat in Martinique, and when we picked up the boat was basically to the day that the island of Martinique shut down because of COVID. So our original plans were to take the boat to St. Martin and then have some stuff done on it in St. Martin. And that all went by the wayside. So
St. Martin closed down too. So
St. Martin closed down a couple weeks or a couple days later, and then the islands just one by one started shutting down. So we basically sailed the boat back to Texas, and we're in Galveston Bay in Kima for a year, and then we started out on the adventure. So that would be December. We moved on the boat in December of 20. So this is our second year living on the boat, and 2.5 years since we bought. We got it in April of 20.
And we spent that year just working on the boat, getting it where we wanted it to be. And then and we were closing out our house also at the same time in Fort Worth. So during COVID, when everybody was shut in, we were basically running up and down the freeway from Dallas to Houston, on our boat and closing out our house. So that was kind of what we did during COVID. And then in April 21 was when we finally left dock. And that first year we kind of was our shakedown cruise. Islands were not really open yet. So we just went up the East Coast to Chesapeake and spent hurricane season in Chesapeake that year. And then we started working our way back to Florida and spent winter in Florida. And then the islands started opening up. And so that was my dream, was to be in the islands. And so Ben decided he should make that happen.
So come February of last year, almost a year ago, is when we left Florida and made our way, did a quick jaunt through the Bahamas and then to St. Thomas. And then to the Eastern Island chain, St. Martin, and then started our way down to Grenada.
Right. So you've seen quite a bit already.
We covered a lot of territory in the first year. And one of the things that we were talking about is we were always on a schedule. There was always a place to go. We needed to get to Chesapeake by hurricane season the first year. So you were on a timeline, and then we didn't leave Chesapeake until November. So now winter's coming on. So now we got to get south to Florida because you're freezing up and you have all these northerns that are coming in. So you're on a timeline to find a weather window to get down south. And then when we left in February, we had to be in Grenada by June. So you're on another timeline of getting across and down.
So this year our goal is really to slow down and just enjoy the islands and spend time. And I mean, the thing that we really love about cruising is getting to know the people and getting to every island's different and getting to know the cultures of the different islands. So I just said this year, people are like, "Where are you going?" And I'm like, "We're not going any further than Antigua." you know, this was our destination, and we'll stay here a while, and then we'll start playing our way back to Grenada. But the whole point of this year is just not rushing from one place to the next. So,
yeah, that sounds nice. Just slowing down a little bit, because of course, like you said, being on a schedule is not always that much fun when you need to rush. And of course, hurricane season is a different thing. But if you have other schedules, that can make the whole experience a little bit different.
Makes it more stressful.
Exactly. That's not the point of sailing, is it?
Well, and I will say, even though we had a schedule, Ben is very cognizant of trying to pick really good weather windows so that, you know, our experience is pleasant. And so he's done a really great job of that. So that's been a really nice thing about getting down here. We don't have to go offshore, like leaving Chesapeake, you're offshore, our boat. The mast is too tall for us to be in the
intercoastal waterway.
So we
have to go offshore. We can't be in the ditch at all.
If the storm comes, we can't duck in, you know, so we just have to pick a really good window to get to our next hop. So he's done a really great job of doing that. And we use a weather service that kind of helps us with that too. So those two things have made the experience, I think, as least stressful as you can be.
Well, you mentioned a few islands that you visited, and I know you've written about these on your blog as well, but what have been some of your highlights so far in the couple of years of cruising?
You know, probably one of the biggest surprises for us has been Dominica. It's a smaller island, very mountainous, but beautiful. And then we've spent a lot of time there going first down to Grenada. We spent several weeks there.
We stopped on the way down with the idea that we were going to be there a couple of days, just
pick up some friends and then head off to St. Lucia.
And we ended up staying for 2 weeks because we just thought we really enjoyed it. And then on our way back up, we spent probably over a month there.
We had different friends coming in and out, and it was a good place for them to fly in and out, and lots to see and do there. So we would rent a car and drive around. And then we've met people who live on the island. So there's a particular market lady that always knows me now and knows what I want and helps me get different fruits, vegetables, eggs, whatever I'm looking for. There's a couple other people that we've met that we've really enjoyed getting to know. So it just makes that experience a lot nicer, you know, once you get to know some of the local people. And so we really enjoyed there. But people ask me what's our favorite island. I can't tell you that because they're all different. I mean, we loved Grenada. We stayed there for 6 months.
Yeah, no wonder. I mean, to me, all of the Caribbean islands sound fabulous. And I feel like I could spend many, many seasons sailing around there. But obviously what you described there, you know, exploring, taking your time, you know, meeting friends and making new friends, it sounds really ideal. It sounds like, you know, the dream. And I'm curious, has the lifestyle kind of met your expectations, what you maybe had when you were preparing for all of this?
Well, you know, it's really interesting for us because our preparation was very short. We lost our mothers in about a 2 week span and went on a weekend together and was like, well, now what are we going to do with ourselves? And Ben's like, well, I've been looking at boats, and that was in like September. And by December we were buying a boat. So
we could have planned this adventure a lot better. You know, there's folks that have spent years, you know, they know in college, when I finish working or whenever I get the chance, I want to, you know, get a boat and go sailing. We did not know that. That was not our experience.
We both sailed. Ben was a big racer. So sailing was in our life, but we didn't prepare, you know, like years in advance. We just kind of decided, next thing I knew, we were jumping off the ledge. So
I think Kitra would have been happy to go to an island and set up shop, you know, get a place. But that would have been really small for me sooner or later. So that was kind of off the table. And we had kind of talked, yeah, maybe we get a boat and we go sailing. But that's about as far as it had really gotten. So when we made the jump, we didn't really have any expectations. It was, I enjoy being on the water. So it was, it probably, I'm sure that I liked the first couple of years more than Kitra did. Her expectation was to get to the islands, to be able to snorkel and swim and meet people and whatever. And so that first year was probably really frustrating for her in that we weren't there. We weren't, we're on a boat, great, but we're not where I want to be. So once we got to the islands, I think all of a sudden our expectations were met. And so far they haven't disappointed, at least from my perspective.
And I think our goals and expectations change as you begin the life, because I guess a lot of people, maybe they know what they're getting into, but we didn't know exactly what we were going to get into. We had chartered in the islands a lot, but you know, when you're on a charter, it's 10 days and you don't even look at the weather. You just go because you have 10 days to get it all in. So for us, getting down here and spending time was really one of the things I wanted to do. And, you know, just learning to live on a boat and live in a very small space and learning to what you need and what you don't need. Those are huge parts of this lifestyle. And those expectations change over time of what you think you need or what you thought you were going to need or whatever. Expectations change because we've met so many people that I didn't really expect the cruising community to be as tight as it is. One thing I love that has become amazing to me is the cruising community is so wonderful in helping each other. You know, back in the States, if the cars broke down on the side of the road, somebody might stop, but they might not. Whereas here, if somebody needs help, it's amazing the people who will come and help you, the people who will, you know, point you in the right direction. The cruising community, the people are super nice and helpful with one another. I mean, almost to a T. I might could think of one person maybe along the road that I thought, well, I don't really want to hang out with him, but in my mind, I can't think of that person. I mean, it's been so many nice, wonderful people from all different backgrounds and parts of the world, but it doesn't matter. You're still part of the cruising community. So that's a huge difference in what I expected, because I expected us, yes, to meet people, you know, but you come and go, whatever. But we were in Grenada for 6 months and we became friends with a lot of people there, and we've seen them all up and down the island chain. And now some of them are, you know, some folks we've met have now gone through the Panama Canal, but I have no doubt that we'll be following them and wishing them well, like their whole journey, because we, you know, really got to know them that well. So that's probably a big difference of expectations that I had.
It is interesting. You know, if you go to a social gathering in the States, you might find somebody that you're talking to that you have something in common with. And then you might actually develop a really good rapport. But if you go to an event in the islands, virtually everybody is in the same boat. I mean, everybody's trying to get into an island. How do you clear customs here? How do you get into this? Can you anchor in this bay? And I don't know if it's because you're on a boat and you're starved for conversation from somebody else that allows you, because you start talking to people. And then if you have a rapport with them, then the next thing you know, you'll kind of hang with them. And we find people that we buddy boat with, and you'll be with them for, I don't know, a month or 6 weeks or something or longer. And then they'll go off on a vein, and later on you'll meet back up with them. So that part is really enjoyable. And I think that was not at all on the table. Everybody said that the cruising community is great and you'll like it. You know, you'll meet all kinds of people, but we didn't really quite get that. I don't think so. That probably exceeds expectations of, you know, there's a good and a bad. You meet people and you become really close friends with. I mean, I'm sure we've got people that we met in Chesapeake that we still talk to, and I'm sure we will meet up with them again. But you're also, there's kind of a bittersweet is because you're always saying goodbye to people. That was not really, you just don't think about that really, that, you know, you see him and then here you are a month later. Hey. So anyway, that part's been kind of fun.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you are by no means the only ones who've said that the cruising community has been such a positive surprise. And it's really great to hear about these experiences of how you meet people and you instantly have something in common with them because you all live on a boat. So you kind of know you're a little bit on the same level. It doesn't matter what kind of person is, where they're from, or, you know, what their socioeconomic status is or any of these. It's just you're on a boat, so we're already friends.
Right.
You have a lot of the same challenges and you know, you're in the same pond together. And it doesn't matter, you know, what your political background is or any of those kind of things. You just really learn from one another a lot and people are just super helpful.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic to hear. But so it sounds to me that you had the idea of sailing, like if sailing is a thing, that's great. We like to sail. But you weren't really, like you said, you weren't planning for this for years and years. It's just the opportunity eventually came, you know, you decided to retire and then just like, oh, well, let's buy a boat now. So talk to me about that. What was the, I guess, few months or a year before you bought the boat? What was that like? And you said you bought your boat in the islands. So how was that process like?
Well, Ben's mom had been living with us for 3 years and I had retired to kind of help take care of her. I was in a position where I could retire. And so I kind of helped take care of her. And so that's kind of what I was doing. And then Ben was kind of getting to that retirement age, but we hadn't really planned for him to retire. COVID kind of retired him. And so found ourselves in this, well, now what kind of, you know, framework of now what are we going to do? And like Ben said before, you know, he really likes to sail. And I couldn't see him puttering around the house a whole lot in retirement. That's not really what he likes to do. So this seemed like something while we still have the ability to do it, you know, because I'm sure at some point physically we won't be able to do this. And so while we still had that ability and while we still had the means to do it, we thought, well, why not? And that's, it was really that simple. Just why not? Why not give it a shot? We like to sail. We like to be on the water.
It was almost a jump and then figure out where you're going to land. Like I said, we didn't really plan this very well. You know, it's we made a commitment to ourselves to do it for 5 years.
There's
going to be the first year is without a doubt the hardest. You have challenges of every unimaginable is, you know, you think of all the things that can go wrong and that you kind of mentally think about them and plan for them. But there's just a myriad of things that happen that you're not expecting. Then you're in a confined space. There's a lot of alone time or togetherness. So learning all of that. Anyway, that part, is part of the challenges that we hadn't anticipated and, you know, been able to plan for. So from the how did we get here perspective, it was really more we started the journey and now it's like whenever you open the door, you kind of deal with what which way you're going to go, if that makes sense.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I will say for the first year after we shoved off, I don't know how many times a week, but I would look at my husband and I'd go, "You live on a boat." Because it was like, well, how do we get here? We live on a boat.
Yeah, how did that happen?
You know, it seemed like such an odd thing to be doing. We live on a boat. Because again, it wasn't something we like talked about, dreamed about. It was like, suddenly we live on a boat. But as far as buying the boat, Ben really wanted, we were monohull sailors. That's really what we... We're used to sailing.
We had chartered catamarans, but we weren't, and they're a great party platform because you can put a lot of people on them and they have more space, but we had always sailed a monohull, and that's kind of what we were leaning towards. But then in big seas and just the two of us, and you've got a lot of sail up, and how do we handle that safely? And that kind of directed us towards the catamaran version. And then it's a lot more stable platform. It's a different platform than it's a different motion altogether than a monohull. But that got us going into the catamaran portion. And then I wanted something that would go upwind like a monohull, and that's the dagger boards are the closest thing, and they're, you know, it's not identical, but it does well.
And so because of that, was not a lot of dagger board catamarans on the market. There was only a few in the U.S. One was way out of our price range. One was in major disrepair. And so there was only a few viable Katanas that were in our price range. And they happened to be in the islands. And one was in Guatemala, which seemed like a really hard place to get to. And one was in Martinique, which you wouldn't think was a hard place to get to. But from the States, there was like one flight a week. And so it took us time to figure out how are we going to get there and get back. And finally, our broker was like, if you're interested in this boat, you might want to, you know, start really getting interested because it's going to go. And so we finally got ourselves to Martinique and did the site survey and all that and then put the offer on it. The thing that was probably surprising of that whole process was we made our offer, signed a contract in December, but we did not close till March. It just drug on. And part of that was some finance issues between buying a French boat and a French island through an American bank. And then part of it was because the boat was French flagged and getting it changed into a U.S. flag was a kind of a process. And so things dragged on, I think, longer than anybody thought they would. So we were quite surprised, I guess, that it took that long for us to get to close on it. And like I said, but by the time we did, now it's March, we finally fly down to get the boat. And literally the day we got there, you know, the island shut down. So
I was actually afraid, you know, COVID was in its infancy. So we didn't know anything about it. We didn't know what to expect. And that was never in our cards, in our wildest imagination on the first year on our boat, what it would be like. And then all of a sudden now you're shut down. I was concerned that U.S. airlines were going to shut our flights down and we wouldn't be able to get down here and get the boat. And the people that had it wanted it off their dock. I had no even inkling that I wouldn't be able to go anywhere. The idea that the island was going to shut and nobody else was going to let us come to their island. And my cousin had come down with us to help pick up the boat. And he called me the night before and he said, so just in case we can't go someplace else, can we sail this boat back to the States? And I was like, yeah, we could, but that's never going to happen. Well, lo and behold, that's exactly what happens. So our, you know, that's probably another thing with our expectations is that any expectation that we had in the beginning was totally changed because of COVID.
Which so, I'm sure, I mean, it was for lots and lots of people. So our story is not in isolation, but it was definitely not something when we put the contract in December, nobody ever heard of COVID. And so it was definitely not on our radar when we did that. And we were thankful that we were able to get here to get the boat and it didn't just sit on some mooring ball for a year. You know, that would have been horrible to have closed on our boat and then now we can't get to it, you know, and they were just going to stick it on a mooring ball. And I can't even imagine the shape it would have been in had that happened to us. So the fact that we got there the day before it closed, I'm thankful for that. The fact that we couldn't go to Martinique and get the work done we had planned was St. Martin was a little stressful or a lot stressful. But we did get to St. Thomas and worked with some people there to get just basic things like chart plotter and radar and, you know, some basic safety things to get us back all the way to Texas. So being able to do that was helpful. And, you know, the good thing, I guess, about it all is Ben ended up doing most of the work on the boat. And so he now knows the boat. And so there's good and bad about all of those traumas at the time. But if you look at the bright side, and in the end, it probably all worked out to the best.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what condition was the boat in? Was it ready to do that big hop from the Caribbean all the way to Texas? It's, you know, it's not that far, but it's quite far when you're on your new boat.
It took us a month and 2 days. We were supposed to be gone 10 days and just fly down, sail to St. Martin, leave the boat, fly home. That's what we were supposed to do. And so a month and 2 days, we finally landed in Texas. So we did spend 10 of those days in St. Thomas getting that work done, radar and AIS and, you know, like basic stuff. But otherwise, we landed in Key West for a couple days and we went to Sarasota a couple days. And rest of the time we were sailing. So
it was, the boat was overall sound, but I don't think it had, I think they had been in limbo for probably about 6 months. Nobody had been on it. So the basic systems, like the water tanks, you couldn't really drink water out of the water tanks because they, you know, they could have had algae or mold or whatever. The fuel ended up being a little bit of an issue because, again, you get slime and mold in the fuel tanks. And so,
and our batteries wouldn't hold
the,
a charge.
The batteries, yes, would not hold a charge. So we had some of the, you know, there was the chart plotter had charts from the Caribbean, but they were basically down for St. Martinique and St. Lucia. So we didn't really have charts. So I had Navionics on my phone, which got us to the BVIs. That's how I got to we got to St. Thomas. And then we bought a chart plotter and strapped it up by the steering station to, I think with zip ties to be able to make that work. And so we had to do some, you know, some basics had to buy batteries to get to where, you know, we could, we didn't have to run engines and such to keep the batteries going. So it was a challenge. And then we didn't know the boat at all. So it's supposed to hold 150 gallons of gas. Does it really? You look in the tank and it doesn't seem like we have much gas left. So we need to now not run the engines and strictly sail because we don't want to run out of gas. So there were all of those things that went along with not knowing the boat and not knowing the systems.
Well, you know, and when you charter a boat, they come on the boat with you and they walk through everything with you and they show you everything. Well, here we land and it's COVID and they're like, you need to go now. So nobody, our broker was supposed to come down and sail with us to St. Martin. He couldn't get there. He was stuck in Grenada. So really, we had a manual that was in French and we didn't have anybody walk through the boat with us. So we knew what we knew from the site survey and that was about it. So we were learning the boat as we were sailing across from island to island where we couldn't stop anywhere if something broke anyway. So it didn't really matter.
Again, probably not the best way to do it. your indoctrination is not, probably a little different.
Yeah, you jumped right into the deep end, but, you know, not by choice, really.
You really did.
I mean, luckily, Ben had been around boats for years and years. So the whole boat concept and engines and all that stuff was not a foreign thing to him. So that helped a lot as we went along.
Yeah, we talked to some friends, I think from the BVIs, and, you know, we were trying to get people to help us move the boat back because it was the three of us and my cousin, and but nobody could come because they couldn't either get flights or whatever. Anyway, so we're talking to some folks and they said, well, so the boat's not for sale yet, correct? So far it's not for sale. So, you know, it was a little bit of a struggle, but it didn't totally deter us.
Oh my, what a start. Yeah. The pandemic certainly throws in some additional challenges. So I'm sure having a new to you boat is, you know, a challenge on its own anyway. So to do that, and of course, you're in a foreign country where they speak French. With that in mind, would you have advice for anyone who is maybe looking to buy a catamaran or a monohull somewhere in the Caribbean, maybe in a country where they don't speak a lot of English?
Well, I will say one thing that helped us originally is a friend did go with us originally to Martinique and he spoke French. And while he didn't sail back with us, he didn't have that ability. He did stay a couple of days and kind of helped us get groceries and just get things, you know, basic things on the boat that we needed and kind of helped us talk with the people, the limited amount of people that were around. Taking someone with you who does speak French in a French island can be helpful. I would say, I don't know how to navigate that whole flag situation. It's kind of a catch-22 in that they don't want to change the flag unless they know for sure you have the financing, but the financing doesn't want to give you financing unless the flag is in the U.S. And so it was a real catch-22 back and forth. And finally, the finance people wanted the boat to be taken to the USVI, which they might have done that way back in the beginning, but they didn't tell us that then. And so that whole back and forth thing, I'm not even sure what's the best way to navigate that, but I would certainly try to work that out with your broker and your finance people before you jump into that.
I think probably the key, if you're going to buy a boat that's out of charter or you're going to buy it from an individual owner, probably really one of the keys is getting a broker that you can work with and that you like. A lot of the brokers, their idea of the boat for you is the boat that they have. And so we dealt with several, and the guy that we ended up working with had a very good understanding of what we were looking for. And it would have panned out a lot better if he would have been, you know, again, COVID, and he wasn't able to get there. So,
and he also spoke French.
He spoke French.
So that would have been helpful.
He had a rapport with the company we were getting it out of. And so that would have helped us a lot. But I do think getting a broker that understands your needs and your price range and what, and that can tell you pros and cons about something that you haven't necessarily thought about. And there's several companies in Florida that have got some really good brokers that can help you navigate through that. And again, with the flagging and insurance and what's acceptable, and you know, the owner of the boat may be asking something that is unreasonable and you don't know that. So, you know, the broker is going to be able to help you get through that. Especially if you're buying a boat in the islands, you know, there's some pros in that you can probably get better deals. The Florida market had gone crazy. And anyway, that, not saying you have to buy it out of the islands, but there's pros and cons to it. It's in the islands. and you know, getting to it and seeing the site survey and all that is difficult. So it would be a lot easier to buy it from the States if you can find the one you're looking for. And the other part of that is narrowing down the boat that you're wanting to find. I mean, we basically knew a couple of models that we were set on that would have been, I guess you'd say, acceptable. And then finding one that was in our price range and that met the criteria, then you just have to go after and find out where it is. And we were lucky in that we found one within a short period of time. You know, there's people that wait for years to be able to get the boat that they're looking for. So,
and we didn't have the luxury of trying to buy one new or, you know, have one built. That wasn't something that was in our price range. So we were needing to buy something used, and then finding something that can buy it used and then pour in as much money as you as you would have bought if you bought it new. So finding one that was in a good enough shape that we could, you know, knew that we weren't going to break the bank just getting it ready to go. I will say that Ben did a lot of research on his own before we even got to the broker stage. He kind of had an idea of what he wanted, which I think helped a lot when we did get to the broker stage, because we could say, this is what we're looking for. And if a broker wasn't really on board with that, because like you said, sometimes they just want to sell you the boat they have, then we could just move on, you know, to find somebody who understood what our needs were and what our expectations were.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you bought your boat on a French island. So was all the documentation, like the survey or the contracts, were those also in French, or were those bilingual or English? Or
so we ended up, and now this was from our broker. He was able, he knew a surveyor that was actually not on Martinique, was on St. Lucia, but he was, he spoke English. And so he knew that that was important to have that documentation written in English, to where we would be able to present it to the insurance company, and we would also be able to understand it without a translation. So the survey, we brought him over, and it was a ferry ride from Martinique to, or St. Lucia to Martinique. And he was there for a couple of days, and we were on the boat with him while he, you know, so we were able to have firsthand knowledge while it was happening. And then we had the written report to back up.
So yes, getting it in English, I think was very important for us, and having him on the boat speaking English to us as he goes through the boat was really important for us, because things get lost in translations. So,
but all of the boat paperwork was in French. So when we went to go back in looking for schematics or any of that, and the boat, katanas are built in France. So I do have resource from the factory, but I still get it in French. So Google Translate helps me a lot.
I bet. Yeah, that's French is not an easy language to understand if you've not studied it. There's basically no hope.
Right.
At least for us.
Well, this has been wonderful to learn a little bit about your story and your experiences. And thank you for sharing that advice, because I know a lot of people are boat shopping on the islands because, you know, the pandemic boat supply has been a little bit weird in the last couple of years from when I've been looking at boats. So there aren't a ton available here in North America. So I'm sure a lot of people are looking out a little bit further afield. So it's good to have this experience to share to everyone.
It's probably not, it's not a terrible experience, and we didn't mean to, but it does have its challenges. And it kind of maybe is a precursor for boat life, because boat life is a daily, it's kind of a daily challenge. Buying a new boat, we've got friends that have gotten new boats, and they still have things that break daily. And so getting an older boat is not necessarily a bad thing. Our boat is a 2012. And, you know, we knew that in a 10-year-old boat, there's going to be certain things that are going to be time for replacement, not only because of breakage, but just new technology, and they're going to be reaching end of life. And so you can plan for your upgrades to tailor make it to what you're looking at. So, what suits your personal preference. You know, I definitely wouldn't shy away from a used boat. 10-year-old boat is definitely, you know, there's going to be less stuff that you have to deal with than a 20-year-old boat. But still, there's plenty of 20-year-old boats that are out there that are in, you know, really nice shape. And a lot of those have had things already been upgraded. And so you may not have to upgrade them for a little bit. But anyway.
Yeah, it's the journey of boat shopping and navigating through everything that's available and what you want and all that. It's all part of the fun. But I think it was well said that you kind of have to survive the boat buying process. It's the precursor to the boat life. If you can't survive that, then, you know, good luck.
Right. Yeah. If you can't stand, you know, if you don't have the stomach for buying it, then you probably are, it's a good thing to not get it.
Well, and the final thing I would say of boat life is you just got to be flexible. You got to be ready. You got to be flexible in your expectations. You got to be flexible in the weather. You know, a friend of ours says, well, you live outside. And I'm like, well, I guess we kind of do. And so flexibility and learning to go with the flow is super important. We've met people who are just like, it's just too stressful. We can't do it. And, you know, they haven't ever, you know, it's been a couple of years and they're out. So having that ability to, something breaks now, I look at my husband, I go, boat life. And I kind of walk away. It's like, okay, here we go again. You know, and being able to just be ready to go with the flow, I think, is really important if you want this lifestyle, is not having to have everything planned. I'm a huge planner and I have had to let that go. And so you plan the best you can, but then you got to be ready for things, unexpected things to happen. And that's just part of the life.
That's perfect advice to wrap this up with. So Ben and Kitra, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. This was great.
Well, thank you for offering the opportunity.
There you have it. I hope you enjoyed today's story. I thought it had a lot of practical tips on buying a boat in a foreign country, and it was just great to hear a little bit more about Caribbean sailing. Next week, it's time for more stories and different stories, this time from monohull sailors who have also been on the podcast before. In the meantime, come find me on Instagram or Patreon as Liverboard Sailing Podcast, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.